Welcome to Voices of the Valley, a captivating podcast series that brings together some of the brightest minds in the agriculture industry. Straight from the field to your living room, we explore the challenges, innovation, and triumphs in modern-day farming and provide insight for consumers who are curious about where their food comes from. Welcome to this week's Voices of the Valley. I'm your host, Corey Lundy. In this week's podcast, we'll be talking to Sonia Salas and Joel Masso, two dedicated food safety scientists who both serve as Associate Vice Presidents of Science for Western Growers. They are also moms who understand the need many parents feel to be confident in the safety of the produce they provide to their families. Sometimes, this confidence in produce safety can be shaken by myth and misinformation that might be perpetuated by well-intentioned sources, but often create unnecessary fear and discourage the consumption of the healthiest and most nutritious parts of our diets. This week, my colleague Kara Timmons cut through the noise with Sonia and Joel to set the record straight on food safety and the protective measures put in place to ensure the safety of your produce from the farm to your grocery store.
Welcome to Voices of the Valley. My name is Kara Timmons. I am the Communications Manager at Western Growers.
Hi, and I'm Sonia Salas, AVP of Science at Western Growers.
Joel Masso, AVP of Science Programs at Western Growers.
Today, we have two people uniquely qualified to talk about food safety and the food that we are giving our kids. So, Joel and Sonia are both food safety scientists, and they are also mothers. So, we are here to talk about some of the things that are on a lot of our minds when we think about what we're giving our kids, what we're giving ourselves, and in terms of food safety and all of the things that are going on before food gets to our grocery stores. So, Sonia, tell us a little bit about your background and your experience in food safety, as well as your experience as a mother.
Thank you for having us today. A little bit of me and my background. I can share that I'm an agronomist by training. I went to school and really focused on agricultural sciences. I work with growers. And what has happened through my career is really that I focus on food safety. Specifically, produce safety is a passion of mine because of the value of fruits and vegetables in the diet of children. So I'm really happy today to offer some of the perspective I have with my career experience and working with the fresh produce industry on food safety issues and other topics.
Beautiful. Joel, same question.
So I grew up in an agricultural area, and my mom was a food scientist, so kind of connected to my mom. And I've always recognized is that food is something that we most intimately share with everybody else. And so when I was growing up, that was kind of the culmination of science and food safety and agriculture was also just about public health and community. And so that's what brought me into it. I went to school for pathogenic microbiology and then pathogenic food microbiology for graduate school, and always had the intention of entering into the produce space for public health and food safety, and have spent a career trying to focus really on improvement when it comes to food safety and never kind of accepting status quo. So that's kind of my background with food safety and childhood. Evolution from talking about pathogens in food, actually cantaloupe, and when I was in junior high, and still talking about it today.
Both of you have children at different ages. So what does it look like through the lens of somebody who knows a lot about food safety and then is also now thinking about the diet of your children? What things do you think about? What things do you see other people and other mothers and other parents, other fathers thinking about that you wish that they knew more about?
So knowledge is power, but it's not everything we need. There are so many influences nowadays, so much information. Kids, as if you look at the statistics, CDC statistics, right? I think it was a couple years ago. I thought it was from 2 to 5 years old, a third of them are not eating a fruit or vegetable every week or daily when they did the study per week. So basically the numbers just show that there is not a good attitude towards fruits and vegetables, right? So from where I sit and what I try to do with my kids is deal with the same issues most parents gotta deal with. It's not easy to get to, you know, kids to eat vegetables and fruits. And I think it, just because we got more knowledge about the the nutritious value of the fresh produce that there are available, it doesn't mean our kids are going to automatically eat them. So what I can share is a challenge, the challenge of most parents, I believe, getting them to get used to vegetables and fruits. And I know that one thing we should always do is introduce them early in life. My kids now are, one is 6 and the other one is 11. So I tried, but wasn't as successful as I wanted to. So now it's getting them in the process of preparing food, telling them about the benefits of fruits and vegetables, using food art to get them interested in the food. I really love resources like the Produce for Better Health Foundation, and also I believe the Produce Moms have recipes. They're wonderful for kids to grab their interest. But we all deal with different things, right? From my perspective, I try to adjust based on their age and what I can do to get them to enjoy fruits and vegetables. That's probably different from someone like Joelle with a toddler. You know, we all have different challenges as our kids grow. There's going to be a point where we can really influence more. So the sooner we do, the better for them, for their health. And the other thing too is they know what I do, so I share things that I learn, so they feel connected to our culture. So one thing we can do is get them to experience what other farmers, growers do, and so they can appreciate their food and where the food is coming from.
Yeah, so I have a toddler, as Sonia just said, and I think one of the advantages of a toddler is I control everything that gets on his plate. So right now he actually does consume quite a lot of fruits and vegetables. But I think specifically to answer to your question of like how parents are approaching what their kids consume and risks going into, you know, their kids' bodies, I think one thing that I have recognized as being like a risk manager is that so often we spend all of our time fixated on what is the tail or the high, you know, the least probable but worst outcome. And it gets really easy to spend all of your time and headspace into that. Well, if you're worried about contaminants or any kind of issue, is that you're always thinking about the riskiest scenario and you're probably forgetting about the majority of eating events that have nothing to do with those things. And if we flip-flopped the time where we're focused more on nutrition and getting higher quality food into our bodies and overall the impact on the totalistic health that somebody has, and I think that's really what I look to impart on my son as he grows up, is that it's really easy to get distracted with something that is either a headline or really clever marketing when it comes to other food products that may be more processed. I think that's one of the disadvantages when it comes to fruits and vegetables, is that you're competing against something with really, really flashy marketing. And that is extremely alluring to anybody, children or adults. And then conversely, it's also very challenging in a social space like we're in, where there's always some sort of travesty or issue that we're having to react to. And so I always just try to remember, it's like, that's the tail of the distribution. It's not the majority of the distribution. And try to stay level set with something that's a little bit more healthy mentally. So that's where I'm at.
Are there resources or ways that people can get more information to kind of soothe some of those fears and help make those decisions when they're at the grocery store with a bit more confidence and kind of soothing of fears?
So where do you go for good information? I would suggest universities as a good resource. In many cases, like official federal, state government entities that do have research programs and also scientists and staff that are credible. And many cases, trade associations like Western Growers and others that do have a science department, they has staff in place to answer some of those questions. So I think just going through fears means trying to find the factual information, get the knowledge, and then look for ways to really enhance the consumption of fruits and vegetables. Because once you know the information there, you'll know that if there are any risks associated with our food, there are also people working on those risks. And it's, we all take risks every day, but this risk is not what people think, right? You gotta be healthy to avoid diseases, obesity, and some other issues. And so we shouldn't let the fear overcome what's the good on eating a healthy diet.
Yeah, I think I've just reinforced what Sonia said. I think universities and government agencies are generally pretty good sources to go look to truth source something that you may have heard online, especially or on social media. I think one of the challenges right now we also see is that our ability to detect and recognize potential risks is greater and greater every day with technology improvements. And so when we think about that, is that it's going to feel like we're getting hit with many new and, you know, sometimes very alarming concerns, when in actuality, it's just that we're recognizing something that we hadn't seen before. And I think that's the other facet to it, is that you can always go and look for data. The important thing, like Sonia mentioned, is finding data that is well validated and supported with good citations. The other is to keep it in perspective, because we have the ability to recognize risks greater than we ever have before, and the social network such that we can spread communication about it in a way we've never done before. That can feel overwhelming. And look to people who you trust to put things into perspective and not react to every data point. Because I think that's one of the things that is challenging as we create more understanding, is that it's also a lot of data points that require really digestion in the full analysis, not independently. So that's my caveat, is when you're going to go look for information, make sure you put it in perspective and look at it in the total picture and not in isolation, because it can have very different outcomes.
In the news, is there kind of a good way for me to know that this is a sign that the systems are working, or is this a sign that I should be worried?
Yeah, I think your question brings to the point something that you have with any kind of risk management policy or protocol, is that it's very difficult to communicate what you've avoided. And that has become one of the biggest challenges in food safety, is that how do you advocate for a larger budget? How do you advocate for resources when so much of what you do goes unnoticed, because that's the job you have? I often say with food safety is that I work for people I'll never meet. And, you know, I think that's the lion's share of all people who are in public health or in food safety related roles, is that how do you communicate to the public of how well the system's working, especially when the headlines are when the system fails, quote unquote, or that's the perception of it. And in actuality, it's probably more the anomaly. So if you actually are hearing about some of these food safety events and they seem like such an outcry or an outrageous event, is that that's likely actually a system that shows that you're doing a really, really good job, because you're preventing so many of them that you, when you do have them, they seem like a rare event. So I don't know, I think it's something societally we need to work on emphasizing and giving credit where credit's due of things that prevent things from happening. Prevention versus working at, you know, to the outbreak. Prevention versus outbreak is a common theme in anything, healthcare as well as agriculture, and most certainly in food safety.
What's the thought process as a food scientist that is going through your mind when you as a food scientist and as a parent are in the grocery store and you are putting things into your cart? What do you know? What's your insight that you can share with other parents?
That's a really great question. And first thing that came to mind is first year at college, I had to grow a small lot of vegetables and fruits. And we had to focus on organic methods at some point and then conventional methods. And you can see the differences. You can appreciate why there are certain protection tools, that's what we call them, to help produce food, because you're growing outdoors in many cases, and there might be pests that you need to control in order to grow or harvest food. Right, so I can appreciate both systems. We can't rely on one to feed the world, right? And with that in mind, when I'm thinking about what I give my kids, I'm not stocking one system. I'm stocking what's available and healthy for their diet. So I try to find fruits and vegetables that are easy to cook, prepare. They are tasty for kids at that time. I'm not looking at, you know, organic versus conventional. So some people might be, and they might have the reasons, but for me, it's more about what's flavor and season. How do I get that into their diets? And when I'm purchasing, that's what I'm looking at. That's my perspective on that.
I think everything Sonia just said, is, you know, I share many of the same sentiments. I think I'm going to approach this from a different spectrum, right? So the first being something Sonia said is that when you're looking to consume fruits and vegetables, looking for, you know, things that are in season, of high color characteristics, that are just higher in nutrient and antioxidants. Things like that are always a good bet. If I want to go deeper than that, then you start to think more about like how and where are they produced, what might be the practices. And organic and conventional are commonly used words now, but I think really what we have is this continuum of agriculture where you have different adoptions of all these different practices. Not to say one is superior or inferior to the other, is that there's just a recognition that you're balancing an entire system. And I think when you balance an entire system, when growing things, you end up with healthier crops. They somewhat are models for what you're going to end up when you consume it. You'll be a healthier person because the balance of the nutrients that are in there and how stable they are also transcends into us. I think that's always what I'm thinking about when it comes to food and food quality, is looking at how the quality of the crop somewhat gives you an indication of the nutrients available to you in it, as well as the propagation kind of practices that people use gives you some insight into the intentionality of them managing where they grow and the resources that they are using in a sustainable fashion. And that's how I evaluate things. I don't think there's one black or white answer as to it. It's a continuum of practices, and you know, some people have different opinions as to which pieces are most important to them in that narrative. But for me, I kind of try to look at it more holistically and not one or the other, and more about what are they trying to achieve with how they produce their crops. When you look at all of the changing variables that are happening to growers and how that impacts their not only long-term viability as a business, but their short-term viability as a business, I don't think a lot of people would actually choose to select for those conditions. It's remarkably difficult to build a sustainable business, not just for producing crops to sell, but to even just, you know, pay your employees. It's so challenging that I think, you know, what Sonia said is that it's not just showing up because it's your job. It's literally a passion to provide people the product, because you can go make that money somewhere else. So it's most definitely not here to make the money. People are doing it for other reasons as well.
Yeah. And to kind of piggyback off of that and circle back to the health aspect of this food, there's a lot of ways, you know, we're in a time of bounty where there's a lot of ways that we can get calories, you know, so this specific way to provide fresh produce, there's so many health benefits. And there's, we even have people who are now talking about, you know, food as a prescription and produce as a prescription. So, you know, to kind of go back to what we were talking about in terms of, it comes down to providing this health to our families. And at its core, that is the most important part. And there are fears, and they're justifiable fears in terms of, we don't want to minimize someone's fears. So how do we balance that individually and, you know, for the industry as well?
Inform, right? Provide factual information as much as possible. So the fears are not just fears, but they're, you know, they have a reason why there is a fear, if there is a fear to have. I think that's important, and that too, we're talking about this, I was thinking about the challenges we have with getting to increase the consumption of fruits and vegetables and the impact on health. For kids, if we look at also statistics, right, obesity, diabetes, and other diseases, they are common around our kids nowadays. It seems like a no-brainer to say, why are we there? Shouldn't we just work on the diet? Could have we prevented this? And the answer is yes, we could prevent many of those, right? And so how do we do that? We have to increase the consumption of fruits and vegetables. That is something that sometimes doesn't go into the headlines, right? But to your point, there is this movement about produce prescriptions and other things that could be good to put that in front of people as an alternative, because people, many times, we don't think about that. Many times it's easy. We don't have time to be creative and start working on food art and work with our kids, because I love to do that, but I don't have time to do that all the time. So it's hard for me. I'm sure it's hard for many moms to do that. And then it's easier to just buy whatever is available, fast food or anything that's processed, it doesn't have the same nutritious value for the kids, and long term can cause obesity and some other diseases, high levels of sugar and that type of thing. The reason why I've been so long in this industry is because it is not just a job, right, to Jolie's point, but it is a passion about really promoting and moving forward food that can be helpful to avoid many of those diseases in children. Having children, that's a challenge for me and many parents, but I feel good every day that I'm trying to make sure that we are producing safe, nutritious food and not working with the growers that are actually doing the job, but we're supporting them. And so I think it is the understanding that's needed, more information.
So I think from a fear perspective, right, there's logical and illogical fear. And so the first thing, you know, to address is to get rid of the illogical fear, and that comes through education and talking about the challenges. And then truthfully, like, fear is well-founded often. Like, that's a visceral, like, biological response to something. It doesn't mean that we can't address, though, what we see as being fearful. And so we can start talking about it, we can improve it. If there are issues, there are rarely situations where there's not a solution. So if we always look towards, okay, let's face head on whatever the problem is, we can usually innovate around that to create some sort of solution. I think our societies are evident of that alone, is that we've been remarkable, you know, humans have been remarkable in what they've been able to design over the years, and that's not going to end anytime soon. So I think when you look at fear and how do you incorporate the challenges that maybe from an agricultural or food perspective into the future is one, to find that the logical fears address, start to address education around them so they're not so fearful, and then start to improve them over time. And, you know, I think Sonia summed it up really well, is that it's easy to fixate on one acute problem because it mentally is easy to understand. Chronic illness and, you know, choosing too often foods that aren't of high nutritious quality have huge impacts long term. And we see that right now with the amount of chronic diseases in our population. So fruits and vegetables, you know, especially ones, you know, that we produce with complete systems in mind, actually help provide us with a nutrition profile that allows us to manage ourselves like a whole system as well, with higher nutrient quality and whatnot. So it's, you know, I think it always comes down to education and discussion around challenges.
So looking ahead from a food science perspective, what does the future look like?
That's a great question. We have a vision, and now to get there, you know, there are practical implications, right? And also challenges. In short, I will say we want to get to a system where there's transparency and understanding for consumers about what the industry does for enhancing food safety. And that's got to come with embracing data science. Data science is strengthening also the research and systems that we have in place, so there is a more efficient use of information and learnings in the system. And at some point, maybe policy, food policy, is driven by data that is has a good quality and is comprehensive. And at this point, we have challenges because data is in silos. So we have different entities working on different issues, and the data is not communicating or talking to each other. So we have challenges with data standardization. But in a perfect future, right, if we can overcome those challenges, we can inform food safety policy and certainly food safety, which could give consumers a better sense of trust in what they eat and embrace the consumption of more nutritious food.
And in this process, is there a mutually beneficial solution for both the consumer and the grower?
Yeah, and I think just connecting more with the, you know, where the food comes from. There are many farm tours, field tours. Get there, ask questions, see how things grow if you're not in the farm environment. I'm sure it's going to give consumers more appreciation. And also, if there are any concerns or questions, that those get to those producing the food directly. So there is more to do probably in communicating the beginning of the change with the end of the change, the chain, and thinking about the food supply chain from the grower to the consumer.
I think, yeah, obviously, Sonia already mentioned data science, and that's where I spent most of my career. But I think one of the things that data is becoming really, really cheap to collect. And I think what's challenging is to identify amongst all that data what's important to manage. And that's a piece that I think excites me, is that right now it feels like a flood of everyone discussing, like, we'll collect all the data, we'll look at all the data. At some point, we'll have all this data. And then we have to decide, what do we actually need to do with that data? And it's not to be universally applied to everything. And effectively, what it should be doing is identifying where we can spend our precious resources to have the biggest impact. So you can insert whatever, you know, variable you want to think there, microbes, contaminants, pesticides, whatever. That's where we're going. And I think that will put pressure on the system in a way we've never felt, because we're allowed to see something we've never seen before. And I think that's going to be the challenge. And that ultimately comes down to more of a human societal challenge as opposed to an actual science challenge. But I think that's where we're going.
Challenging and exciting. That's what we're passionate about. Moving data science is something that's happening now. It's moving. But to Joel's point, what's important? And it goes back into, how do you differentiate information, right? Where do you put your resources and that type of thing? So there is excitement, you know, if you think about future of agriculture.
Yeah, you can see how things are going to change. And then the other piece that Sonia talked about that I wanted to kind of add on is thinking about fruits and vegetables as we really try to incorporate more consumption of them from a health perspective is to think about how you purchase other things within your lives and you pay for distinguishing characteristics. And we tend not to think that way when we go into a grocery store to buy like an apple or a pear or something like that, is that the amount we are able to contribute funds people on the grower's level to be able to implement new innovative tools and ways to bring things to market. So it is an investment in the future of society, even if you just think it's an apple. And I think that that's something that also, you know, people could do well to remind themselves is when they go in, you know, it's cliche to say you vote with your dollar, but you do. And so investing in the companies and the products and the people who are producing your crops has an enormous impact, not just on what's on the shelves, but what we see 10 years from now. You know, if I think about moms and parents really consuming, you know, buying things for their children to consume, is to remember kind of where I started in my conversation of saying that, you know, we often feel like we're in that tail of the distribution, that really rare occurrence, that's really bad outcomes. And we're fixated out there because that's where continuous improvement is. That's how we get better. But not to forget that, like, we have the luxury of living in the United States with some of the safest food within the world. Doesn't mean we can't be better. We will be better. But to rationalize that, because I do think that's somewhat the noise and the illogical fear, it's really salacious from a headline perspective, but it's not necessarily the predominant message that you should be getting about your food system.
Yeah, I love what you said, because it really comes down to gratitude, and with that, opening your mind and opportunities to improve, continuous improvement. So I think if we didn't discuss anything, you know, regarding to consumers and how to feel part of the system, I think that's a point that we can make. Just feel part of the system, be grateful, be curious, and then find factual information as much as you can to address any of the fears you might have. But don't let fear be in the way of making progress on your health and having a healthy diet.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's Voices of the Valley. Today's episode was produced by Kara Timmons. A special thanks to Sonia Salas and Joelle Masso for joining us this week to talk about food safety. In our next episode of Voices of the Valley, we'll be joined by Megan Cavanaugh, VP of Science and Agronomy at BioSI, to talk about soil health and soil management. The future of soil health and food production go hand in hand, so we'll be covering how soil fits into crop productivity, sustainability, and the overall ecosystem. Make sure you tune in each week and join us as we explore more about farming and our food system with some of the most well-respected experts in the industry. If you enjoyed our podcast today, be sure to follow us on X, leave a comment, and let us know your thoughts. We'll be selecting a few lucky recipients to receive a coveted Western Growers branded Stanley mug. You can find us at our handle, @WesternGrowers. And don't forget to like and subscribe so you don't miss any of our future episodes. That wraps up this week's Voices of the Valley. I'm Corey Lundy, signing off. Catch you next week. Thanks for tuning in to Voices of the Valley, a Western Growers production, produced by Corey Lundy, Ann Donahue, Michelle Rivera, Kara Timmons, and Julia Nellis. As always, we'd like to give a special shout out to our guest for joining us. Don't forget to like and subscribe to catch our future episodes, and we invite you to follow us on social media to continue the conversation.